Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For all those people that might be unfamiliar with my voice, my name is still Peter Mingles. We own buildingfortunesradio.com. We started buildingfortunesradio.com towards the tail end of 2012, beginning part of 2013. And I wanted it really to be able to have a platform and a microphone to be able to talk, because I knew that sometimes people didn't want me to, meaning like sometimes I'd say things that might be unpopular, or maybe sometimes I'd bring up topics that didn't fit their agenda, and I figured that, you know, I don't like to be censored, and boy, wasn't that something. So that means something a little bit more in 2021. But we are here. I like to mention the date. I've been told, mention the date early, so this way we know if we're listening to a replay or not, or how far back. It is April 30th. 2021, for all those people keeping score. It's around noon Eastern time, and we are here with a great friend of ours. His name is always Jim Turner. Jim Turner is an attorney, works with Citizens for Health. They have a great website, citizens.org, CITIZENS.ORG. They have a wonderful newsletter. Check that out. And Jim is here as an attorney working with Citizens since 1993. He's been an attorney even before then, was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, had an unbelievable background, has taught our law audience and me personally so many things. I mean, so many things. Any specific radio show that you listen to, you might think, well, that's an older one. Should I listen to that? Absolutely, you should. You should consume all of them. I'm somewhat biased because Jim's got great information and usually some history associated with all the really great topics that we talk about. So he's driving in a car. He's not driving, so for all those people that wonder. So he's riding in the car that is being driven. But eventually what we're going to do is we're going to be here for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, talking about different and various topics. And I always say thank you, Jim Turner, for lending any time you can possibly give us to Building Fortunes Radio. So thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Peter. I always enjoy being here. We always have good conversations, and I'm starting to get feedback from people who hear the programs, and so I think it's a very good way to spend time.
Excellent. Okay, good. So we were going to talk a little bit about Joe Biden, and I got to give full disclosure. We're going to give a little bit of full disclosure here on my part. I don't know who I voted for, and the reason why I say that is because I let my wife fill out the ballot, so I don't know who she voted for, and because my wife had to open up her ballot before mailing it in, meaning like she didn't do the naked ballot thing, or she sent in a naked ballot, meaning in the state of Florida, you had to put your voting ballot inside a privacy sleeve. And when I told her that was the case, I heard her opening up her ballot. I don't know. So I think I'm a perfect example of everything that's wrong with the voting system. So I don't know who I voted for. I told her to vote for Donald Trump, so that's what I told her for. But whether she actually was able to fill in the dots or not or did it correctly, I have no clue. So I'm breaking all the voter laws out there, probably. So for all those people, I don't know. But I think my intent was to vote for Donald Trump, and that sometimes comes across in some of the things that I might mention. But officially, I don't know who I voted for. Or I don't know. The answer is there you go. And that's the real world. I hate to say it for all those people that make rules. Welcome to the real world. And one of the reasons why I'm mentioning this too is as we speak right now, there's a conference that's going on. It's on a domain name called MLMconference.com. A lot of people know that I do a lot of stuff with MLM companies and home-based businesses. And they're having conversations that are in their world, and I always like to have real-world conversations. So, Jim Turner, thanks for being here, and I'll let you comment on anything that I've mentioned so far. And the only thing that I've said factually so far, I'm sure that people can verify, is that today's date is April 30th. So over to you.
Yeah, I have no comments on anything. I think you got the date right. And aside from that, you know, there's not much to talk about.
Yeah, this is exactly right. Okay, so there was a, 100 days, I know this is the wrong term, State of the Union conversation with Joe Biden that I grabbed some snippets from, but we have a new administration. There's lots of changes. I'm sure some of them are very positive, and some of them are somewhat sweeping as far as their scope. And I know that one of the ones that I want to talk about is relating to, healthcare and vaccines, and masks and the persona of what's going on with the pandemic and some of those things relative to the economy and global stuff. But I'll let you kick it off because you probably watched more of Joe Biden's speech than I did.
Well, I just think that from the Joe Biden speech point of view, that was a unique and a historic presentation, and it's pointing in a direction that Biden thinks the country is going, and he wants to move it in that direction. It's a very ambitious idea of taking large amounts of money and putting it in the hands of a larger group of people than is normally the case. That's his professed desire. Whether that can happen or not is very unclear. We'll know over probably the next 100 days how that works its way out as a matter of policy, and then it'll probably take another few years to figure out whether if the policy is adopted, whether it works or not. It's a very interesting situation from my perspective. I think lots and lots of change is underway. Many things that we took for granted 2 years ago, let's say, just arbitrarily pick 2 years ago, many things we took for granted 2 years ago are not able to be taken granted for now. I mean, we have things very, very different. And I'm watching as stuff unfolds, the idea that we're going to go back to the way we were before seems to me to be very unlikely, although driving around here today, the traffic seems like it's getting back to normal, i.e. impassable. But the problem is that pretty much all the breakdowns that we felt in the last 18 months were going on prior to COVID. The systems that we rely on, whether it's the justice system, the healthcare system, the transportation system, the infrastructure, all of those things were breaking down and new things were emerging. And I think the pandemic experience has validated the fact that we're in a situation of enormous change. I've been reading things such as commercial buildings around the country with so many firms having gone to offices remotely. It looks like, the home premise is gaining momentum. I mean, there were home offices and home businesses and homeschooling and home health all existent before March of 2020. But they came online with a ferocity that no one expected after March of 2020, and it looks like a lot of it's going to stay. We work with law firms around the country, and many of them move their lawyers virtually and saved an enormous amount of money and got all the work done anyway and are now not very anxious to move them back. And it looks like when you look at towns like Manhattan, L.A., Washington, that's sort of generically true about a lot of companies. So I think that the home-based living movement has got a lot of energy fused into it over the last year. With regard to healthcare, we have a healthcare system that has been under enormous strain for a long time, and the pandemic has put it under a great deal of strain, and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. A lot of what's going on in the various kinds of debates that are out there are addressing those kinds of issues. So what I think we've got going on is a continuation of a shift, a major shift. I think the shift goes back, all the way to the 50s. We had a completely different world after World War II than we had before. Very specifically, we had things like the 40-hour week, which left people with many hours that they could call discretionary hours that they could use for consumption, and they did it. And they consumed all kinds of stuff, and that drove the economy enormously. That was a big, big difference from before. And then it was something like the GI Bill that put people in jobs and education and so forth. We had, another major shift in that people had disposable income. That is, it used to be that you worked basically 10-hour days until noon on Saturday and then spent Sunday doing church. That was before the Depression. After the Depression and the Second World War, we were doing 40-hour weeks and working and getting good pay, and that pay was going, we're talking $15 an hour as a minimum wage right now, but people were making a lot more than $15 an hour in that economic buildup that went on between the 50s and the 70s. And so there was disposable time and disposable income, and people went out and bought all kinds of things and drove the economy. And then, when you got stagnated, and been stagnated for quite a while, and then when the pandemic came along, things got really, really tough. The tourism in New York is down well over 50%. Tourism in D.C., similar. Those are big, big money things. And on the other hand, here comes Biden saying, let's pour money into the economy this way, that way, and every which way. And the first quarter of 2021, we have a 6.1 growth rate in the economy, 6.1. And it's on track to be over 6% for the year. If that happens, that will be the biggest leap forward economically that this country has ever made. It would be an unbelievable thrust. I say ever made because it's a 6% off an extremely large base. I don't know that there's ever been anything quite that large as a percentage, but even if there were something as large or slightly larger, the percentage is off a smaller base. We have enormous economic activity stored up and ready to break loose. And it's fascinating. You've got, the Republican Senate is trying to stop all this. That is the 50 Republican senators, but the Republicans out in the field, out in the cities and in the countryside are saying, send us the money. We'll build things. We'll build roads. We'll build bridges. We'll build broadband. And we'll build a new infrastructure for America. And we'll make it be economically powerful. So that's kind of where we are in the Biden world. I'm trying to understand and figure out what they're trying to do with the pandemic. Basically, vaccinate and then say everything's getting better. And we'll see how well they can pull that off. There's an enormous number of problems that are buried inside that strategy. But anyway, Peter, that's a reaction that I have to just talking about Biden in today's world. I saw a really interesting headline. I haven't read the article yet, but it was a summary of Biden's first 100 days, and it said Biden's first 100 days should make Trump jealous because he's taken the Trump agenda, packaged it up in a very nice, pleasant voice, and is moving forward many of the things that Trump was trying to move forward. And so far it's having quite a bit of success. And so it's very interesting. I'm a founder and editor of a website called Transpartisan Review. I suggest the listeners may want to go over to Transpartisan Review and see the way we analyze things politically. Because we say that the spectrum of left to right completely misrepresents the politics of the country today. That in fact, it's a matrix. It's a matrix that has order and freedom on one axis and left and right on the other axis. And so you end up with so-called strange bedfellow coalitions. And we're starting to see a little bit of that beginning to emerge. You have two black senators. One is Republican from South Carolina. The other is a Democrat from New Jersey. And they're working together to come up with a criminal reform law. And both of the parties say that they're very likely to follow whatever those two guys can come up with. And you would never know that from reading a newspaper. Because the way the newspapers are organized is you've got a crazy black guy from South Carolina who's a right-winger and a bunch of really smart activist black people on the left, and they're fighting. You would never know that there was a group of people working in the Senate to come up with a policy that very likely, certainly if they are able to come up with a policy, and it looks like they will, that policy will be adopted and be part of the national framework. That's our analysis from a quadrant point of view, a four-quadrant point of view. So anyway, Peter, what I'm saying is we have a very fascinating dynamic underway, and you can't really sort it out as pro or anti-Trump or pro or anti-Biden. I don't believe you can. For example, I would argue that we had both a blue wave and a red wave in the last election, and the country, which is very not very far apart in terms of the actual voting blocks, they're not very far apart. The extremes on the left and the extremes on the right are very far apart. But the number of independents went up by 4% this month. It's now around 44% are independents. About something in the neighborhood of a little over 30% are Democrats, a little over 25% are Republicans, something like that. But remember, that's on registered voters for the most part. That is the registered voters. When you look at the, and that's about roughly half, a little more than half of the voters. When you look at it, Obama and Trump had about 25 to 30% support by the public. It looks like Biden's going to beat both of them by quite a bit the way things are unfolding right now. A very strong grassroots Republican city leadership and country leadership folks are looking for the money for building out their communities and solving problems in their communities. And they're not particularly following, it doesn't appear, following the Republican leadership in the Senate. So that's a quick overview analysis of what I think's going on. And I can then turn out like every other person making a comment to be wrong.
Well, perfect analogies. I'm going to kind of comment a little bit about like what's happening as far as like my view. So I think that you had mentioned it as well. A lot of these changes were happening before coronavirus and the pandemic and even before the election. But I think the coronavirus and the stuff that happened with Donald Trump and the election, it was a little bit like, and this analogy you might be able to grasp onto because I know you grew up in Ohio and there's snow in Ohio. I remember when I was a kid growing up in New York where we had snow and hills and a reluctant sledder. So if I was at the top of the hill and there was a reluctant sledder, like, you know, somebody who's just a little bit afraid to go down, we had a tendency of just kind of like pushing him. And then he would go down the hill, and they most of the time would come back up because they'd find out how much fun it was. But I think the reluctant sledder analogy might fit in some parts of what happened. If people were thinking about vaccines and sending their kids to school or becoming homeschoolers, the reluctant sledder is now homeschooling their kids because now they're told that they have to go do this or not. If there was somebody that was thinking about working from home, now they're really working from home. If there was somebody that was considering their health or what they're putting in their body, now they're really considering it. So part of my analogies might be thinking about that reluctant sledder, and I think this Donald Trump election and the COVID thing and what's happening with Joe Biden and the moves Joe Biden is making really accelerated things by 10, 20, maybe even 30 years in certain analogies. The other thing is I have learned that I will be a Democrat from now on. And the reason is because it's very costly to be a Trump supporter, like Rudy Giuliani, Steve Bannon, anybody else would probably say, you know, I pay a price, Roger Stone. I pay a price for being a Trump supporter. Dan Bongino interviewed Donald Trump on his YouTube channel, and they banned that video. They might even ban his whole channel. I can't talk about vaccines without getting community strikes. So I think for survival purposes, I'm going to be a bona fide Democrat. And I got to say that because chances are that's where all the money is going to go to for this. And then as we're pushing for 51st states and all the other things that are going, you know, the alleged court packing, it just seems pretty obvious. If you want to be on the winning team, you probably need to move over the D side. So that's my playful comment, but it's partially true. I think they're going to have a run at this for probably a considerable period of time. And Joe Biden is basically, you know, playing as if he's got the football. And he talks about unity and all that sort of stuff, but it's going to be his way or the highway. And I think there's a lot of people right behind him. By the way, pushing a lot of strings. I'm going to mention one thing. I'll let you comment on that first, and I'm going to mention some other stuff that's happening that nobody knows about. So back to you.
Well, that what you just said, I mean, brings to mind the common statement I've heard all my life, and that is politics is a beanbag. And one of the problems that I had with Donald Trump was that I can't tell whether he thought he was entering a system that was going to be a golf game or maybe an NFL football game, but it turned out to be mixed martial arts. And unfortunately, he dropped the ball on a number of situations. And you mentioned others, Bannon. I mean, Bannon, you know, Bannon's sloppy in terms of his way of putting arguments out. And I remember he said, you know, that happy families, as he said, as Dostoevsky said, happy families are all the same. Unhappy families are very interesting and different, or however the quote goes. Very interesting point he was trying to make, except Tolstoy made that statement, not Dostoevsky. And that's roughly how accurate Bannon is on almost everything he says. His father was worked for AT&T, got into the employee stockholder plan, and got raped. I'm totally on the side of those folks who got raped by AT&T. They just dumped their plan, and he lost a whole bunch of money. I mean, I personally watched that whole event happen, and then I learned later that Dan's father was a part of it, was one of the victims, and I think outrageous. But Bannon has to be accurate in what he's doing. He made a movie about history, and what he did is he picked the sequel book rather than the original book, and the sequel book, everybody agreed, was not a very good book. If he put all the same time, energy, and effort into the original book, the author of the books would not have come out and said, you got it all wrong. So that's Bannon. And you look at Stone, he does some of the same kind of stuff. The problem isn't, in my view, it isn't Republican and Democrat per se. The problem is that there are sloppy people. And, I mean, Trump was sloppy on January 6th. I mean, he should not have allowed what happened. It's not so much that he fomented it. Yeah, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. That'll all get sorted out. But the real problem is he should not have allowed it to happen. That may be unfair, but still, then when you're in that job, you get all the benefits and all the blame. And he just didn't see it. And I think in doing that, let down that constituency. The constituency performed for pretty damn well in the election. And as I say, I think there was a blue wave and a red wave. You know, the blue guys lost seats in the House. They took the White House. You would imagine that they should have taken the Senate easily. They were looking for seven pickups, and they basically didn't have any pickups in the election. They got the two pickups later, essentially. And then in the House, they lost seats. That's a red wave. Now, because of the way the system's organized, you can have a blue wave and a red wave. And the system will absorb that. And that's what's going on right now. But the underlying drive of the country isn't going to be diverted by Trump or by Biden Harris or Pelosi. The underlying drive of the country will continue to move in a direction that has basically 4% of the world's population controlling well over half of the world's economy. I don't think there's any American that would like that to change particularly. There's some dynamics about how we use that power, and there's a lot of fighting over how we use it. but there's a very strong movement to say, let's give that power up. So those driving forces are underway, and I think they come from the red side and from the blue side, and I think that the red and the blue side are pushing the country along. And as I said, the two senators that are working on criminal reform, they're going to come up with some policies. And there are others over there. There's like several caucuses working specifically, Republicans and Democrats. If we can get them to learn that there are more people in the debate than just Democrats and Republicans, that there are independents and there are non-registered, and all of them are very important, if we can learn that, then we can actually use this energy to come up with a bunch of policies that will make differences. And this infrastructure thing, fascinating to watch unfold. Very fascinating.
Absolutely.
That's so my response to your point.
That's good. All good stuff. I mean, I know you follow a lot of these things, and I don't I mentioned Bannon and Stone and Giuliani. They are definitely flawed individuals that have plenty of things to pick on. But holy cow, I could probably also mention Hunter and Hillary and a few other people. And it just seems like, wow, you get a free pass. Teflon, what was it?
Wait. Hillary didn't get a free pass.
As far as the, well, she's not president. I guess that's true.
And also Hunter, is under investigation right now. Now, you can say, well, it's not going to go anywhere, but he's being investigated. I don't know. None of Trump's kids, as far as I know, were investigated while he was president. Hunter's being investigated. And I wouldn't want the current attorney general after me, no matter how, even if I was not guilty, I wouldn't want him after me. I mean, he's the guy that went after the Oklahoma bomber. I mean, he's a hardcore, tough as nails prosecutor. He's got Hunter Biden in his sights. Now, I'm not arguing one way or the other on the case, but what I am saying is I wouldn't necessarily call that getting a pass.
Right. So far, it's been kind of suppressed, if you will, in the media. Most of the people don't know the things that you know. So anyway, so back to other stuff.
Let's make a point. Just understand, the media is a special arena in which these battles are fought out. And so just because somebody wins a media battle does not mean they win a legal battle.
True.
And, there's lots of illustrations of people who've got great headlines and ended up in jail.
Right. That is so true. So in reference to what we see now as far as the U.S. and the loosening up or the tightening up of this pandemic, I think we're at a crossroad where, like, a lot of people don't know where they're going. It looks a little bit like a traffic jam in a third world country. There's people moving all over the place. Masks, no masks. Vaccines, no vaccines. Vaccine passport to be able to go on a plane or a health passport, no. Cruise ships just getting open, but only if you're privileged and had a vaccine. All this sort of stuff is going on. So do you have any comment on where we are? Because I think we're probably right now, if you just say to me, Peter, where are we in this analogy? I'd say we are right now in the middle of that third world country traffic jam. Like, we're all over the place. I don't think we've ever been more all over the place than we are right now figuring out which direction we're trying to go in. So do you have any comment on any of that or opinion on any of that or where we're going?
I think we are in a mess, and I think in a huge conceptual traffic jam, which is playing itself out in people's lives. I heard Fauci talking about being on the Today Show on March 10th of 2020, and then on March 10th, 2021. And on March 10th, 2020, there were five cases of COVID in the United States, and he said it was going to get worse, but they had pretty much got it under control and things would work out, but it's going to get worse, and everybody should be prepared for that. When he was on 1 year later to the day, he said not in his wildest imagination that he believed that 550,000 Americans, but more than that actually, would die from COVID. And my view is, why didn't he believe that? The problem they've got is a conceptual problem, and they're trying to deal with it using a kind of a war analogy. You get in there and fight, 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 fight. they've not been able, as far as I can see in the mess that we have on our hands, we have not effectively harnessed the energy of the American people. The American people, given the opportunity to make choices, gather information, be informed, will make a wide range of choices. That's how our country works. And then we work as hard as we can to sort out what we learn from the wide range of choices that people have made. And unfortunately, the country's argument was, here's one answer and only one answer, and everybody else who doesn't buy that answer, there's something wrong with them. And the more that argument is made, the worse it's going to be as we unfold. Even if the vaccines work, perhaps it looks like maybe 40% of the public is not going to take the vaccines no matter what. If you were going to create a situation in which 40% of the public is a pariah, you've got a real problem on your hands. And it has nothing to do with vax resistors or vax promoters. We've got sort of two rabid groups out there, one that says vaccines at all costs, nothing else, and the other one says no vaccines ever and nothing else. And those guys are the same, roughly 15% on each end that fight every issue. And there's a process for working our way through what actually is going on here. And unfortunately, that process has been bypassed completely with the argument that things are so dangerous and so bad and we're in so much trouble that we have to drop our procedures and go forward in our in our extremist way. And pretty much in that framework, if you try anything, it's considered to be the right thing. It's not that you look for the best answer. It's you look for the best answer you can find, articulate, and get people to follow, whether it's by cajoling, seducing, or forcing. And the idea is the more you can get to do it, the better everything's going to be. And that has not worked on pretty much any issue that this country has ever had. We'll see whether it works on the COVID.
Excellent. Now, there was a I'm switching topics just a little bit, but kind of opening it up towards how you can turn it into this wide range of topics of a whole bunch of power grabs by our fine federal government. There was a Supreme Court decision just last week ruling against the FTC on something called Rule 13B. And I know you're an attorney. You'll be able to explain it better than I can. But for all those regular people listening in, the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, is basically the ones that are supposed to say, hey, you're not telling the truth. No deception here. But they took their power to be able to say, if we think you're, as a company, doing something wrong, we can go to a judge and have him freeze your assets, shut your business down, assign a receiver to run the business while we try to figure stuff out. And the FTC basically said, I'm sorry, the Supreme Court basically said, you weren't really given that permission. You took that inch we gave you and you kind of brought it to a yard and then some, and 9-0, you can't do that stuff anymore. And that was Rule 13B. And I'm kind of closely attached to that because there's a company that we do a radio show for, not a company, I'm sorry, a distributor for a company that we do a radio show for that was in the crosshairs and still is of the FTC. And they basically had their assets shut down by the FTC using 13B. And we're watching that stuff shake out as we speak. So to summarize, the Supreme Court said, you don't have that power, FTC. And that started off with the FTC being given a little bit of power, but taking a lot more, and then also freezing assets and assigning monetary penalties without necessarily due process, let's say. So I'll let you comment on that. And then if you will, when you're done with that, kind of extend that to what's actually happening live now with all of our rights in question, that I have to wear a mask, get a vaccine, go home early, et cetera. Back to you.
Well, first of all, the way you summarize that case is very very clear and accurate. The legal formality is that the FTC has the authority, no doubt about it, to seek and obtain injunctions against false and misleading practices or claims. And in this instance, it was a payday cash check cashing company, which was doing things which pretty much anyone who observes what they were doing, which was basically had a system to run up the amount of money that the individuals owed to them in a way that they kept hidden from the individuals. So they signed up for a payday loan, and then they were in a process that went on forever, very difficult to get out of it, and they were paying huge amounts of money for a very small loan. And that all was, there was never any dispute about that. The company, it didn't quite fess up, but it basically stopped fighting that issue. But what the FTC did was, it wasn't so much seizing their assets as it was fining them. They fined them $2.1 billion, the FTC did, using this injunctive power that exists in the law. But that injunctive power and injunctions in general are not designed to collect money. That's not what injunctions are for. So that was one place where the court came down on the FTC. The second place is that the Congress had passed two laws, I believe it was two laws, subsequent to the FTC starting this practice, in which they laid out how, they laid out the procedure that the FTC needed to follow in order to levy such a fine. And the FTC didn't follow them. Basically, a 9-0 decision. That's part of my, one of my first evidences in the notion that the country is far less divided than one might think. If we can keep on our process and focus on how the law works and figure out how we're going to deal with the legal system's process, many issues which become contentious actually disappear. I'm going to just jump in and say, you know, on the election, 60 courts looked at the election as to whether it was stolen or not stolen. Now, they all ruled that it wasn't. Now, the issue there that's interesting is I did a lot of work in electoral politics from the time I was in high school all the way up through the 2000 election in one way or another. And I can tell you that I've never seen an election where there wasn't a contention about whether there was fraud or misrepresentation or something like that. That's always a battle. And how that battle is handled is one of the ways that politicians learn to make progress. Richard Nixon, for example, did not dispute Kennedy's winning in 1960, even though historians would say he had a pretty good case. But he parlayed that action into becoming president in 68. My point is that how you handle the fact that the counting the ballots is one of the contentious places in our politics is a crucial part of how good you are as a politician. And it's another one of those cases where Trump dropped the ball. Okay, so anyway, on this FTC situation, the court has a process. And that process was followed, and the court said 9-0, FTC, you can't do that. And I can see many cases that are out there where if someone would bring them the resources were there to fight the cases, you get the FTC blocked or the FDA. There are things FDA is doing, which I think courts would stop, things the FCC are doing. I mean, the entire regulatory state, you know, the administrative state is vulnerable in the legal process. Now, you know, you can go political and get them changed and whatever, but my point is that there is a process for handling these things, and the rhetorical battle can go on in the press. It's fine. Trump raised over $200 million saying the election had been stolen. Trump's very good at doing the part that's necessary to keep a small constituency revved up, but he hasn't been very good in turning that into actual power, and so, you know, I'm very cautious about seeing that model as a model that's going to get us through anything. And that's where the FTC got cut back in a way. I mean, Trump's got some really interesting stuff. He's got an executive order. He had an executive order that cut back the administrative state to some extent. Hardly anyone knows that that even exists. He had an executive order to join the trillion tree planting process. Hardly anyone knows that exists. And there are others. So I was intrigued when I saw that headline that said, you know, Biden's taking a lot of the Trump agenda and wrapping it up in a nice friendly handshake and smile and moving forward in ways that Trump wished he could have moved forward but was unable to. And we'll see, because there's an awful lot of that Republican constituency that wants to do things like the whole build out of the infrastructure that Trump's talking about. So, yes, 9-0 in the court against the SEC, FTC, and I believe you could get a lot of 9-0 cases if they were organized right and presented properly.
Excellent. Now, let's take a look at the FTC kind of creeping into areas that they're not supposed to, and then several years or maybe several decades later getting tagged on it and then saying, oh, you can't be doing that. Let's take that analogy relative to what's going on right now with our liberties, I'm going to say our, you know, rights, and what's happening with our ability to do things with this pandemic as an excuse. I got to wear a mask. I can't fly on a plane. I won't be able to do this. Who knows if I'll be able to send my kids or me go to a school. I might not be able to get this kind of a license, that kind of a thing, without some little piece of paper that says I've been vaccinated. And even though there might be some challenges with vaccinations, I can't even talk about those because I'll be banned and possibly even jailed. So is that government overreach, or is that allowable because politicians know everything in pandemic situations and have full power?
Well, first of all, that's not government overreach. That's cultural overreach, and the government is fomenting it. But so far in this country, the official positions have been much more muted than that. There are a lot of reasons for that. We have a federal system, so we have the federal government, and then we have the state governments and the local governments. And it's interesting to see how they interplay, because that's one of the ways you get different governmental positions coming out almost 180 degrees on many of the issues you just described. But more to the point, following the process, you did end up on Thanksgiving Eve last year with the Supreme Court decision. It was a 5-4 decision, which had no opinion, but it had several concurring, I think there were two concurring and one or maybe two dissents. And so we know what kind of the framework of the argument was. But basically that court ruled 5-4 that Como's closing of parts of the city because of COVID was not constitutional. Couldn't do it. And that opinion that was written by Justice Gorsuch was very tough on how we're going to go forward dealing with things like a vaccine passport, mandatory vaccination, and so forth. And if you look around, you'll see that the debate now is more about vaccine takers and hesitant vaccine takers. And that team, the one that wants people to take the vaccine, might look at the hesitant vaccine takers as the reluctant sledder that you talked about. And they can just give them a little nudge and they'll go down the hill and be real happy with the vaccines. Unfortunately, they're getting enough blowback that there's some serious problems. It might be a very careful, simple problem. Maybe 5% of the vaccine recipients are going to be harmed. Maybe we should say 5% is not enough to not, 5% is not enough to stop the vaccine program, but it could easily be enough to provide conscientious objector status or a whole other range of alternatives that can be done that would help people not have to take vaccines who don't want to take vaccines. And there are a lot of underlying reasons why that's a sounder policy than trying to force people or even cajole people into taking the vaccine. Right now, with a significant percentage of the public saying definitely they don't want to take the vaccine, and even people who've taken the first dose, a lot of them aren't taking the second dose, there's a lot of potential for gathering huge amounts of information from that group of people. Why aren't people coming for the second shot? Are we having more side effects to the first shot than are being reported? Here's a way of finding out an answer to that kind of question. Unfortunately, in the chaos that we have for substituting for policy on the COVID-19, the result that we have is lots and lots of opportunities are being allowed to slip away, and we're going to come out of this with no more knowledge about how these things work than we went into them if we are going to insist that the only or at least primary answer is vaccinate 100% of the population and restrict anybody who's not vaccinated. That policy will, in the long run, provide outcomes that will be detrimental to society. And it doesn't seem to me that there's much argument against that, although you'll hear a lot of rhetoric against that reality. So I think I think everybody should take their position that they desire to take. Citizens for Health says we object strongly to communities where there are people who want to be vaccinated and there's vaccinations being held in freezers in the hospital because there are special groups. We also object to having anybody forced to take the vaccine. These decisions are really crucial for people to make on behalf of themselves, and then the impact of that individual decision-making is what gives the country its national policy framework. So that's the dynamic that we are pushing for.
Excellent. Well, we're approaching towards the end. I'm going to mention one last thing that maybe we'll talk about on the next radio show. You know, Fauci, I remember when Fauci was talking about stuff related to, you know, the vaccine's going to come out and the post-marketing results are going to dictate what we're going to do, which is basically saying, like, okay, we're going to do it, and we're going to research all the people that are acting like the quote-unquote guinea pigs for our social experiment on these vaccine things. And I'm like, well, that feels a little bit uncomfortable. One of the things that I've heard about these vaccine takers is that there's shedding, and a lot of people don't know about shedding. We're not talking about dogs and skin or, you know, dogs and hair. We're talking about, like, when people are breathing, they expire things. This is natural. That's how viruses and things spread. And there's been some challenges associated with the vaccine spread, meaning people that take a vaccine wound up spreading their messenger RNA or whatever it is that they wound up spreading. And for those people that say, you know, it's really weird, people around them, the non-vaccinated, around the vaccinated are getting sick, and it's affecting pregnancy and menstrual cycles and a few other things as well. So we might find a whole population of people that say, as this information kind of develops, wait a minute, I want masks now. I want masks on people that just got vaccinated. So maybe Fauci's onto something. Maybe that's why he says that people that are vaccinated still need to wear masks, and they just haven't told us yet why. So that might be part conspiracy, part real, or who knows what. But in this post-marketing vaccine situation that we're in, I'd be kind of curious to find out this whole shedding, quote-unquote, phenomenon that I'm starting to read about by regular people, not just conspiracy thinkers. So, Jim, I don't know if you have any comment on that as well. Maybe
a
push.
The problem is there are a whole bunch of issues that need to be addressed that haven't been addressed, and they've not been addressed because it has been determined that on an emergency basis we should rush through the vaccines and make sure that everybody takes them. And then all the energy of the society has gone into that, and that's what we're doing. Now, I'm arguing, I totally agree with Fauci that the post-marketing surveys are crucial to figuring out where we're going to go next and where we've ended up. I think those post-marketing research activities should, in fact, cover all the non-vaccinated as well. We should understand. I mean, you know, there's a whole argument that the non-vaccinated arguers make that they actually have better protection. Let's go test it and see. That's a question that can be asked and answered. Let's go do it. Let's see what happens. There are a lot of scientists out there who are raising all kinds of questions, and all of them need to be tested and figured out. And the issue that's so funny is that just because you decide in extremis to do a policy does not mean you should not do everything you can to find out whatever the alternatives tell you, find out exactly what the policy has done. Just because that's the policy the country's committed to does not mean you should bend every institution, the press, the courts, the Congress, the police. You should not bend every single person and force in the society, every institution, to forcing that idea on to the public. In order for this society to work, we need to have all kinds of viewpoints out there and intervene only when we've got evidence that we need to intervene. And we haven't reached that point yet. We're ignoring the people who are saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to get my second shot. Why is that? We should not be ignoring that. And so I am very much for post-marketing, and I want it to be robust and deep and get at both why people took vaccines and why they didn't, and what the results were for each of them.
Right, and unfortunately, sometimes we're not allowed to talk. We're not allowed to have that open conversation because what will happen? You'll get censored, you'll get banned, you might get fired. You know, who knows what's going on? So we live in an unhealthy environment. Maybe not to a
very unlikely
pandemic.
That the Supreme Court. Very unlikely the Supreme Court is going to say that's okay. The problem
right.
is between when the policy's made and when it gets to the court, all
right.
kinds of people exercise all kinds of power, and when they do push their own biases, and that's again, that's part of the political system we live in.
There we go. So for all those reasons, you want to check out buildingforgesradio.com/citizens, because Jim Turner is a great gentleman who's got a lot of great views and wonderful opinions and comments and experiences and documentation talking about all the things that are happening here on Building Fortunes Radio. So, Jim, I'll let you wrap it up. And thanks for all the time you spent with us, including the, you know, the personal time that you're taking out today.
Well, I appreciate it very much being able to have these conversations, and I like your questions, and I think that the society's on a really major trend, which I think I call the breakout. We're breaking out of old institutions that were, in fact, holding us back. You know, it's always been democracy is a it's not beanbag either, and it's a tough system. And people need to stand up and make their arguments and make their rebuttals and so forth. And the premise of the American system is that as we move along like that, we will come up with the best answers that will solve more problems for the world than using any of the authoritarian systems that exist around the world. So I'm all for it, and I think we should have a robust debate about vaccine use and very, very strong response research on what we've had as the responses to the vaccine and so forth. So, Peter, I think it's been a good show. I'm glad to be able to contribute these things and look forward to having our next conversation.
Thank you very much. Yep, thanks a million, Jim. We'll catch everybody next week on Building Fortunes Radio. See you next time.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.